It is Saturday, the 15th of August, 2015, and this is episode 255 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I'm Chris. We're coming to you on a Saturday. I say we because I'm joined by Ian, as ever, always and eternally.
Good afternoon, Chris.
And it's afternoon, yes. It's not even evening, is it?
No.
Yes. This is highly irregular. There we go.
It's almost civil. It's almost civil.
Yes, almost. Do you want to talk about your drone? Or are you not going to talk about your drone at this point? Ian's got a drone, everyone.
I've got a drone.
Okay.
And it's thanks to friend of the show, Bomb Dogs. It's not his fault. I'm just, it costs so much money, I feel I have to blame somebody.
Yes, you need to justify your expenditure by blaming it on someone else.
He bought a Phantom. I loved his videos and thought, sod it. I've waited all this time, talked about it all this time. Do it.
So I've done it. Why not? It's proper gadget geekery.
Awesome. It is.
And like I said to you before the show, you better to get in now than before they ban them all.
Absolutely. And I did think that this morning when I threw it up in the middle of Glasgow and it was up quite a height, and I thought
and four jets were scrambled.
And yeah, just thought, okay. Yeah, I can see things getting banned.
Yeah, definitely. But then yeah, enjoy it while it still lasts.
Yeah.
Don't go pushing the boundaries. Right, let's have a talk about what's been going on in the tech news. As I said to you previously, finger on the pulse me. This completely flew me by, this news story, but Google's no longer Google.
No, Google. Wow. Google's Alphabet.
Google is now Alphabet. This is effectively a restructuring. It's kind of, imagine what Google was before. Take the kind of core of what Google was and keep that called Google, but put it inside a bigger container called Alphabet. And Alphabet now is going to contain Google and a number of other subsidiaries and an increasing number of subsidiaries. Basically, that outer package is looked after by Sergey and Larry. And I guess Sundar Pichai is now going to be in charge of Google as it now stands, this slightly slimmed down Leviathan inside this larger container. And it sounds like they really want to get into the kind of, I guess it's their incubator, as they're kind of keen on saying at the moment, going with their kind of random moonshots and things like that. But that's going to be contained in this Alphabet. And one of the reasons they're doing it is to try and protect Google's name. And obviously Google is their big money driving enterprise, from failures and things that go wrong. So by keeping these separate companies inside Alphabet sort of independent and not linked, they can try and protect the Google name from things going wrong. And I guess protection and privacy and things like that come along with these kind of edge cases. And I guess, and also, I'm just thinking out loud now, if they've got self-driving cars, which aren't part of Google, it's better that they're not the Google cars anymore when they go and kill someone for the first time.
And it also means it can be evil.
Oh, and they can be evil. Okay.
So I mean, part of me, like you said right at the start, you know, they've restructured, and I think it is we'll only probably know a year, 2 years from now whether it's just been is this the latest tax dodge that's in vogue right now? Is this the best way of, you know, structuring the pots and the cash and the, you know, legally what they're obliged to do and what they're not obliged to do? I don't know. It got a lot of press, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to make a terrible bit of difference.
It's the kind of restructuring that would normally happen internally by, you know, giving new department heads and new departments.
Yep.
But that's why I do think there is credence to what they're saying, as far as they just want to protect Google as an enterprise from these real fringe cases, because they want to keep pushing the boundaries, and by pushing the boundaries, they keep annoying people. And by taking it outside of the actual Google name, they can try and protect that stock. Interesting point in the sort of show notes about what does this mean about the money, because obviously most of the money that's generated by Google is from their core market. So in this one product range called Google is going to be generating most of their cash, and how do they then siphon that off through the Alphabet and into the sort of different areas? It sounds like a massively complex thing. And do you think it's necessary?
As I said,
it hurt them?
I don't think so. I think for us, I think for normal users, you're not going to see much difference. You're just going to be using Google. You know, you'll be using Android. You'll be using YouTube. None of that really changes. It's the, you can almost say the rest of the company is the kind of punts they're making on what could be the next big thing. Because search, and we've seen a lot of talk about how people are getting hacked off with adverts, and you know they're putting up ad blockers, and iOS 9 is going to come along with ad blockers, and that is going to dent, you know. Google might not be massively, but there's a change coming. But at the same time, this has always been the problem with the internet. You can't just put up free content. You know, somebody's got to pay for something. You know, if I'm going to invest time in doing a music track, then should I give it away for free and get nothing out of it, or should I get something for it?
Interesting. I heard the other day that the internet, for the first year ever, internet advertising spend has been greater online than it has been over traditional TV and radio advertising, which is a massive tipping point. People are, you know, it's like you say, where the adverts go, people get a bit, you know, don't like it, and then if suddenly that stream dries up, then yeah, they're in trouble unless they've got other money streams to sort of.
And we were talking about it. In fact, I totally forgot to say hello from Roy, so a friend of the show, Roy, who listens to us intently. And this is a new sponsor opportunity that I'm going to take listeners to lunch. That's the new opportunity that I've uncovered yesterday. So it's going to be a really expensive way of growing the podcast, but
it's probably not efficient.
No. So we'll grow by what, 50 odd people by the end of the year, and I'll need to buy new clothes because my waistline will be massive again. But Roy was pointing out he's got kids, so for what, you know. Mixture of ages, but everything's YouTube, everything's online video. There's just terrestrial TV is dead to them. It's just like that generation is just gone. So
there are YouTubers that they watch that we've never even heard of, and their biggest things, you know.
That's where there's a lot of money at the moment. Whereas me and you probably don't really see that. You know, I think of adverts as still when I go to a website, you know, like iMore, and I get adverts delivered to me. Oh, I don't like these. That's annoying. I don't mind so much the kind of 3-4 second ad rolls at the start of YouTube videos.
They're starting to bug me a bit.
They bug me when I get out. The ones that bug me are when it's like, it's 30 seconds to watch a 30 second video.
Yes. That's, no, absolutely. And gaming sites do that quite a lot, actually. They have pre-roll that goes on forever, and you know, it's annoying.
Yeah. But it's an interesting thing. And I think it's coming back to the, you know, Google are looking at what's their next bet, what's their next stream, because search.
Well, it's not then. Yeah. But that's it. Google aren't looking for that anymore. Alphabet are looking for that.
Alphabet, but it's the same thing. And I think by structuring this way, but it does allow them to make more punts, and you know, if something works, then do they sell it off? You know, does something work? Do they keep it? You know, if it's one of these, you know, so they've made a punt on, they've taken on Nest. And Nest, there's a whole internet of things, and it's
good. Yes, and they're going to have that as a separate container and their health side of things. Look, I mean, and they're also, everything everyone keeps saying about Google at the moment is how much all pervasive their kind of knowledge and their understanding of people is. And by siphoning it off and splitting it into these separate entities, they're probably trying to detract from that as well and say, look, no, Google is only interested in this. All these other companies have their own sort of specialist interest. But the only thing it sounds is kind of, you know, a backward step as far as integration goes. You know, you're always talking about things integrating more, and this could lead to a fragmentation, and you know, how much in the background are all these companies going to share data anyway? So are they doing it purely as a front, or is it actually going to be physically that these things are just a completely separate entity?
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, think back to all the legal issues that Microsoft have had, and Google have started to get them recently as well. They are so big in certain territories around the world that they just can't, you know, they can't grow anymore. They're not being allowed, you know, so government are saying, you know, legally we're going to stop you from growing. And maybe this structure allows it. Maybe the structure allows it to actually say, yeah, we're going to go and do all the robots, and we're going to do smart cars, and that's nothing to do with this Google arm.
Yeah, and you see that in massive anonymous megacorps that get all the government contracts. They're still got monopolies effectively, but they get away with it because they've got a parent company and all these individual, you know, subsidiaries that are separate. So maybe that does help on that legal front. Right, let's move on to Carphone Warehouse, because I think it was probably just over a week ago now. They had they're the next company to suffer a massive breach of data. Basically, they've had hackers come in, take a load of data. Carphone Warehouse is obviously wider than just that set of shops. It's got a lot of online presence in different brands, but it's also Dixon's as well, and so that massive chain. And they reckon two point four million customers may have had their data leaked, and that's pretty severe. They've tried to sort of say it's limited down to a certain set of customers, but they were a bit uncommitted about exactly who has had their data breached.
I got an email. So,
did you?
Yeah, which annoyed me because I don't think I've ever used them. So,
I can't remember whether I have or not. That's the problem nowadays. I don't know, and especially because they call themselves so many different things.
Yeah, so I got an email, and again, for all I know, it's spammers that are copying and pasting the email. But it was at E2Save Mobile's important message from E2Save, and I'm thinking, who's this? But they are one of the subsidiaries.
So onestopphoneshop.com and E2Save.com, mobiles.co.uk, as you were talking about. TalkTalk customers, Talk Mobile, Carphone Warehouse, and potentially Dixon's and people like that. So it's a massive thing. They're also uncommitted about whether exactly what was taken and what was encrypted and what wasn't. So
they are,
it's all a bit messy, all a bit out of date, and all a bit we were hanging on in there to try and survive. And
what hacked me off? It happened on the Wednesday, and they didn't say anything to the Saturday.
Yeah,
and
so they left it.
That makes me think that was deliberately done to avoid a massive stock market fall, you know, Thursday, Friday. Just very suspicious that it comes out on a Saturday afternoon, that there's been this 2.4. And even the email, when you read through it, it was like, we've indicated that some of your data held in our systems has been accessed. This may include some of your personal details, include your name, address, date of birth, and bank details. Part of me feels, well, I've changed my bank anyway, so I'm not too fussed about the bank details because that's old. Name and address probably out there anyway. Date of birth again.
It's still a thing, and
I think the thing that was disappointing as well, when you think back to Sony's massive hack, and they gave you a year's subscription to Experian, is that the right, for one of these credit, Experian or Equifax, but these guys just say, by the way, go and check your credit rating. go and visit Experian and Equifax. Sorry about this.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're hearing it more and more often. I'm wondering what the answer is, because you're hearing it more and more often. Maybe we're getting more and more kind of resigned to this data.
We are, but everybody's so blasé about it.
Yeah. Maybe people don't quite realise that. Well, I mean, the other thing, it's hard for people to understand, what do I have to do about this? Because, like, for me, I can't remember whether I've been a customer of any of those or have entered online. I probably have done some things at some point. I haven't had an email. What do I do? I mean, again, do I just go and change all my passwords again? Well, it's not clear, and it's not clear what's gone. And obviously there's an interest on their own part to not let you know exactly what's been taken.
No.
Because from the sounds of it, it all sounds a little bit shady.
Shady and disappointing, but we're just going to hear more and more of them.
New interactive mobile coverage map has been released by Ofcom. They have admitted that this map is based around the provider's details. So it's the data set that was available anyway on each provider's website where they said where their coverage was. They've amalgamated and put it all together into a nice interactive map so you can have a quick look at what services work well in your area. And I have to say that in my experience of those, when I was searching around for a provider, the maps were fairly accurate, I'd say. So they have said they're going to refine this over time and make it more useful. And it is good to have all four sets of data all in one place rather than having to go to three separate websites to go and see what's the Absolutely. Best for your particular town, city, Absolutely. Or village or whatever.
And certainly the ones that I checked up were, and it's been 3 in a year I've been with recently, and it did say it still showed you that rocky edge that where I where I still work, and 3 years right on the cusp of you're out of this tower, but you're in this tower, and it's depending on which side of the office you're on, you sometimes get a signal and you sometimes didn't. So that still looks to be the case. So it ties up with that.
Yeah. So there you go. So that is I'd search Ofcom Interactive map.
The only thing that's weird is it takes so long to load. It is very
slow. It did take a while, yeah.
Yeah, rubbish.
And it's not the most stylish of interfaces going on. It's a little bit 2000s.
Yeah, and that's the reason I put it in. It felt like a kind of something that they've spent, you know, from 5 years ago.
Yeah, maybe they've been working on it that long. But they're
waiting for a Flash plugin, but you need Flash to use this. Yeah,
their buttons aren't particularly attractive. Microsoft is launching its open source tool to help developers port their apps to Windows 10. iOS developers, they're trying to court by giving them a set of tools which will enable them to reuse their Objective-C sort of code and use it and to build Windows and Windows Phone apps. We talked about this a while back, but it's actually starting now to be released into public beta rather than it was in private beta before. Android's version is still in private at the moment.
Again, this annoyed me. Probably just because the people I was following, because I follow quite a lot of Apple folk, and a few of them were giving it the old, you know, because it's on GitHub, so you can go and look at the source code. And they were looking at the code and giving it a bit of a, oh, look at that. Look at the language they've used there. Look at the, you know, the way they've done that. Snot, snot, ha, ha. And it's like, but it's going to take a while for Microsoft to change. You know, they're making, this is a big commitment they're making. And I think
the fact that they've got something on GitHub available to everyone to go and have a look at. And who cares? They've made a lot of money out of their programming. Have you, whoever you are, scoffers?
and I'll be honest, if somebody said to me, we're going to put your code publicly on GitHub, I'd be like, oh, nope. Don't do that.
No. Even privately on my own internal Git servers, it's embarrassing enough. Yeah. So at the moment, it's not Windows Phone compatible, but it will be shortly, or the idea is to have that be the case so it can work with ARM processors. Basically, it's coming soon. As a developer, I could see how you've got this iOS code. Why not try and put it through this interpreter and see what happens? See whether it will actually check out some code. I wonder whether there'll be some howls from Apple about.
I think there might be.
Whether there's any proprietary stuff in there that you're effectively hooking into there. You know how we had all that problem with Sun Microsystems and Google and how they reused the kind of Java type.
And they're arguing again code. This week about that. It's just
So I wonder whether there's a similar thing here in that, hey, you're taking our APIs and compiling them to your own code, and those APIs are our property. So I wonder whether there's going to be that kind of shenanigans happening.
I'm not sure. I know from an enterprise perspective, IBM's got a fairly rich offering now, but they have such a strong partnership with Apple. But there's quite a lot of vendors out there that are in the game of write it once and then pick your operating system and we'll produce you an app.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they're fantastic.
Not, I was going to say they're generally speaking, they'll be utility applications, right?
Yeah, but a lot of the enterprise ones, yeah, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a simple way of how do I make, you know, make one app? I can deploy it anywhere. It's dead easy to work. You know, I'm not interested in, you know, a really fancy UI. I want something.
Yeah, maintenance of one code base is, you know, that's devastatingly efficient. That's good.
So there's that, and as I said, you know, we've been looking at things like IBM and some other vendors. So it's no big surprise that Microsoft see themselves that we need to catch up.
Yeah. Windows 10 is going to be, or is now available on Raspberry Pi. So this is a cut down sort of non-interface version of Windows 10, but it has all the underlying sort of libraries there, so therefore you can program, and you can program in all sorts of different languages, and they are shoving it out there ready for you to have a. Is that on GitHub as well? Is that available for you to download, or
I don't know,
you
if
actually download it?
Sample
codes on GitHub.
Sample codes in GitHub, but the actual OS itself was from a Microsoft address. But like the previous story, this is just, it's, you know, it's good Microsoft are falling through on. We used to joke about Google, how Google I/O every year was basically, let's look back at last year. You did none of these things.
Yeah.
And at least, and I'm not saying Microsoft's any different, because we've seen this week that the Surface Hub is now put back to next year. So things are slipping. Although I do get to play with a HoloLens next week. Woo!
Yay.
It's just good to see that we're going to commit for Raspberry Pi. So we're going to do the.
Well, they said Windows 10 is going to be everywhere, including Raspberry Pi, and it is. So there you go. Twitter is removing the 140 character limit on direct messaging. So you can now waffle to your heart's content if you DM someone.
Great.
Yes. HTC has been storing fingerprints unencrypted, as it turns out. So some people did some investigation into the HTC One smartphone. I think it was the HTC One. I might have just been... Yes, it was the HTC One. And it was storing its fingerprint data unencrypted. And I guess they had that pointed out to them, that the error of their ways. And with a system update, they have now corrected that issue. But it's, you know, with the more that we're relying on these kind of biometrics to do things like payments and things like that, this is quite an important thing to make sure that they are doing this properly.
Yeah, that was always a worry at the start. There was always that thing about Apple, you know, and the fingerprint, and, oh, it's easy to hack. And we've not really had any way. I think there was a, was it German researchers prove that they could lift a fingerprint off and do something with a dummy fingerprint and access your data.
Mythbusters did it. They grabbed a fingerprint off of and used a couple of techniques to build it up into a fingerprint, and it fooled a load of scanners. Once you've got that actual, what your fingerprint is, it's a bit like taking that copy of your, you know, your signature and being able to pump it anywhere you like. Because as more and more sophisticated things rely on your fingerprint for verification, if someone's got a copy of it, they've got a head start in trying to break that.
I think that's why some of the kind of principal security researchers are against thing, you know, the biometric, you know, aspects, because it is such a powerful thing. You know, it's not like you can change a fingerprint, whereas you can change a password.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's one of these things. Yeah,
once that information is out in the ether, then that's it.
There's nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do to stop it.
Sandpaper? I don't know.
It'd be like, what was it, Men in Black, and they had that burnt
your fingerprint. Yeah.
Melted your fingerprint.
Forgot about that.
Samsung, they've been chatting to us this week. They've got their own Samsung Pay, basically. So it's along the same lines as all the other pay, but they're going to use the same technology that's in your credit cards for their payments. So actually, it'll work anywhere you see your NFC type payments, your whatever the touch pay. What do they call them? I'm so confused. All the pays. What's the normal credit card one?
Well, you've just got the kind of swipe, but then you've got contactless.
Contactless is what I'm looking for. Yeah, okay. That's the word I was looking for, yeah. So anyway, you've got that kind of contactless symbol, you'd be able to do this because it's using the same magnetic secure transmission, or MST it's called, which is all coded, encodified and basically token locked and things like that. So that's why it's secure. Good for Samsung.
Yeah, so it's coming out in America on the 25th. And they plan to roll out to UK, Spain, and China.
It just, everything feels confusing at the moment. It's going to have to be, it's vendors as much as anything that are going to have to get themselves sorted as to, we need one technology that does all these things rather than, you know, knowing, oh, I go to that shop and it works, and then I go to that shop and it doesn't work.
Yeah. Kind of thing. And it's a bit like, I saw somebody blog posting this week about messaging platforms, and it's just like, the world, we need to decide on one and use it. See all this... You know, like, if I'm talking to you, it's mostly Hangouts. If I'm talking to Bomb, it's mostly...
pretty sure that's a very...
No, but, you know, there's just a fragmentation.
Sounds a bit like communism.
Yeah, but then...
It's a bit like saying, all those photographers from news organisations, you go away, we'll have our own official one.
But I got the gist of it, you know.
No, so totally.
That's probably my communism coming out at heart. It's just like, yep, dictator. I've decided. That's what we're doing.
All these news stations doing exactly the same, thing. You go away. We'll just have one official one, and dear that won't get corrupted at all.
Dear Rupert Murdoch, I've chosen Fox. Exactly. You are now the official news station for the world.
Samsung has also released its S6 Edge.
I was just going to finish. It's a bit like that's for the pay things. It's really fragmented at the moment, and it needs a. I think Apple have kind of pushed it enough forward.
It's communists take over.
Yeah, no, but all I'm saying is I think there's enough. I mean, I was in Marks yesterday, and it was the first time on their little thing. It's actually got a little Apple Pay logo digitally. So somebody's obviously in the background. They're starting to say, we need to promote this more, that you can come up and do this, and you can use your watch and you can use your phone. You know, but I think
I said last week. I'm totally obsessed with the contactless at the moment. It's just annoying. I hate it because it's very easy to spend lots of money. Which I don't have. So yes, the Galaxy 6 Edge Plus. So this is basically like the Galaxy 6 Edge, the one with the kind of screen that goes round the corners.
The one that you liked.
Actually, it was kind of sci-fi. And this is just a slightly bigger version. In fact, they've been releasing lots of products. So rather than go through all, they've had a product bump, really, I guess, is what things. They've got this slightly bigger product. They've also released the Note 5, that which is their sort of big phablet. So this is a slightly bigger one, but they've managed to make a bigger screen without actually making the device much smaller, things like that. So, and all of the time, these have come with slightly better batteries and slightly better specs, basically.
And the weird thing for me was like, so you liked the Edge. I always thought it was a bit.
Have you seen one in the flesh?
No.
There was just something about the way that it went round a corner. It's just
no. I know what you mean, because for years I've talked about having, you know, curved bendy glass screen. or flexible glass or something that's just different. And clearly it's not different enough, or there's not enough, you know, utility from it to make it a really strong feature.
Who knows? But as soon as Apple do it, everyone think it's amazing.
No, I know, and this is one of the things that I put in. This was out the Verge review, and they basically said there was two things that was much better about it. The battery, slightly bigger, because Samsung have went all non-removable. So for a lot of people, it wasn't so much that Samsung phones were great phones. They were slightly cheaper than Apple, but you could replace the battery and you could put your own storage in it. You know, so they did have that bit of flexibility. That's all gone now. So a lot of, and it's, I'm hearing it, you know, people saying, well, I may as well just go iOS. You know, I may as well just go Apple now, because you're just the same. But the bit that I put in here was touching back to your point. You really liked that Edge, you know, display. It was something different.
I didn't like it for the facility of it. I just liked it because it looked quite funky.
Yeah, but they've actually put in this thing called Apps Edge, so you can quick launch applications, because I think previously it was just people you could see. And it's the fact that you could, and what they're saying is it actually makes a difference in using it, because it's now really easy to just swap between different apps really quickly.
Okay.
So there's things like that I think are interesting.
Like I say, I didn't like it for any utility feature. I just liked it because when you scrolled from screen to screen, it looked funky when it went around the edge. And you know how all those renders that people keep doing, this is what the next iPhone's going to look like. They're always like this edge to edge, and maybe even creeping around the corners. And
it never
Samsung
is.
Did it. And it never is. And Samsung did it. And I it just looked...
No, I agree. And the thing about Samsung is the screens always pop as well. You know, so they always have it's just one of these. It's just, you look at it, you can tell a Samsung phone just from
it's
like...
It's very saturated,
yeah. That is coming to the UK. And it is out in August. But the Galaxy Note 5
is not. No, which is weird, isn't it?
I don't get it. Why not?
I don't know. maybe they're going to release something else. But yeah, it does seem strange, because the Note is popular amongst people who do want that intermediate size, as they've called it, the tablet, the phablet.
And it's got the stabby thing. It's got the stylus.
The stylus as well, which has become popular amongst phone and tablet users, basically. And in other, you know, iOS stylus use has gone up, basically, because, you know, quite a useful tool when you've got a tablet. So those things could be successful, but they've also released what can only be described as a keyboard nappy, which gets slots over the bottom of your S6 and adds a physical keyboard in the kind of old BlackBerry style of keyboards, covering up half of the screen. It automatically adjusts the screen, so it doesn't. It's not like screen goes behind this keyboard, but it just looks rubbish.
So there was a company that did, and they were getting sued because they made a BlackBerry keyboard that plugged into the bottom of your iPhone. And BlackBerry were like, "Hold on, that's our thing. We do the hardware keyboards. You can't, because it looked exactly the same kind of the way they'd done all the keys, the way it was ribbed and edged and stuff." Mm-hmm. And it was like, no, it's the term to court, and it didn't sell much anyway, because it just made your already big phone ridiculous.
it's like a wand.
But what I don't get about this is, like, yes, I've just spent loads of money on a 5.7 inch screen, and I then cover it up with a bit of plastic.
But at least then you've still got like 3.5 inches left.
But that's, come on. It's just,
I know, it looks rubbish. The reviewer that we've sort of had a quick read through, also he says it was a bit rubbish from a technology point of view, and it was not very usable, so it's going to fail. But nevertheless, they've done it. Keyboard nappies. Samsung Gear 2 as well, smartwatch. Now, it doesn't look like this. It's a nice round looking watch from the picture I can see here, but it doesn't look like it's using Android Wear as the operating system. It's using its own thing.
I thought it was using iOS when I first looked at it, or watchOS, because it was
what a surprise.
Because the icons were very familiar to me.
Yes. Yeah.
But the nice thing about this is it actually looks like a well-designed watch.
It does. Yes, it actually looks like a watch at first, rather than looking like a gadget, which is actually, like I say, I still think the Apple Watch is a little bit too utility and a little bit too, you know, it does what it does, but it, you know, they've been restricted in what they can fit in.
Therefore. Yes. Yeah. No, clearly it's a Gen 1 thing. And I think it's been the same with most of the smartwatches up to now. There's only been so far battery and technologies allowing them to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
But this actually looked really nice.
Looks nice, but like I say, it's maybe a dead end because it's going to need its own apps developed and all those kind of things. And I don't think that's the future of these kind of smart devices, wearables. So.
We will see you next month at IFA. So that's where they're going to do the announcement in Berlin.
Okay, there we go. We'll see what they say then. John Cridland. I don't know who John Cridland is, but he's saying kids need to study art at school because... quite frankly, we don't want all these spotty nerds developing games. We want artists doing it because they tend to come up with better ideas than big boobs and no clothes.
Now, the bit that gets me about this is, as you say, who is he? He's the head of CBI. He's the head of the Confederation of British Industry. So, fairly senior, carries a bit of clout, and he's running around saying, I don't want spotty nerds, you know.
He kind of needs spotty nerds that are a bit artistic.
Yeah. But spotting nerds can be artistic.
I think his point is he doesn't just need coders. He needs people. You've seen the difference between a well-coded game and a truly artistic and beautiful game to play, right?
Yeah,
and
well,
I think that's
the
point he's getting at.
It's the same as somebody that can code. I mean, I know plenty of people that can code really well, but they can't design. You know, because design's different.
Coding by its very act is actually quite an artistic endeavour. It's you know, you wouldn't think it, but actually to put a nice bit of code together is a fairly arty thing to do.
I've known people that can code amazing, but the colour schemes, even just in simple web apps, it's like, how did you think that was right? You know, it's just
I'm very much one of those people who I can't design for Toffee. I have to try things, you know, 100 times, and maybe one out of that 100 times it'll work. But I can, you know, I can put a bit of code together just about. But I know things are done right and done wrong. Some people do not even have that inbuilt, you know, ability to see that looks really, really bad.
I was going to be really, really nasty and say it's almost taste. Some people just don't have taste.
It's true. I think that's
And you look at something on a screen and it's like, you know, you'll see like a red against a background of orange or something like that. And you're like...
The Ofcom guy that did the mashup for the match was not a truly stylish interface designer.
But clearly a fantastic coder.
But could code together a mashup. So yeah. I actually agree with, you know, what he's saying. I think Spotty Nerd is unfair in that I don't think he meant it as in, you know, as a disparaging thing. I just think they said, we've got coders, we actually need artists. And I do agree with that in games. It's a creative endeavour.
There's a bit of it. So what he was basically talking about was he was promoting these. So usually we've always talked about STEM subjects, so the science, technology, engineering, and maths. But he wants it to be STEAM. He wants arts in there as well.
Yeah, and that's fair enough.
I think it's a fair point, but I think it was just unfortunate that they used the term spotty nerd.
Yes, it wasn't well chosen.
No, and it was like, you cock. You know, just even for just saying that, just really irritated me.
But then he could have used, you know, arty farty druggies and probably,
yeah, that's fine, you know, well, wait, Glasgow uni's full of arty farty druggies, so.
Lol, Ian, lol.
Haha, I'm with it. I'm with the youth, damn it.
Yeah, so lol is no longer a thing. It's too outdated now. Apparently very few percentage of people actually end up using it. Most use haha.
I'm afraid I still use lol from time to time.
I'm a loller. But that's because I'm well out of date spotty nerd, innit?
Yeah. I do use emoji quite a bit. I do like my emoji.
Apparently, so it's ha-ha followed by an emoji now. It's the done thing.
I don't like the he-he.
He-he.
Or he-he. It's he-he.
It's he-he.
He-he. He-he.
Nah, it's he-he.
So if you were laughing,
that's a more, because ha ha is a hearty ha 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 ha, and then he he is a cheek. No, it's not. It's a cheeky he he.
Don't tell. don't tell me it's not like that.
Yeah, but Alal is 1.9% of people now, so we're
which is
we're,
tiny.
We are unique.
Yeah. Welcome to the future of digital
podcasts. There you go. Yeah, that was our last story. Lol.
Uh-huh.
If you want to find out more about us, our different laughters and
hold
what
on,
we
picks, man.
Oh, have you got one?
No. I could whittle on about
every week. I ask whether there's a pick, and you go no.
I could whittle on about a NAS drive that I've got that's actually working really well, but
I'll give you another week to build that in.
No, the blog. I'm just going to point to a blog post because I'm already at 2,000 words, like an arsehole. It's just I started off. I'll do a couple hundred words and rah 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 rah.
I think that classes you as a spotty nerd if you're talking 2,000 words about a NAS drive.
Well, lol.
You could be you could be talking about a sunset or a beautiful piece of art or
I'm lolling on the outside, but I'm crushed in the
talking
inside.
Talking about NAS. Digitaloutbox.com is our website. info@digitaloutbox.com is our email address. Twitter is digitaloutbox. I am on Twitter as GZUK. And if you want to follow my racing along, academyracer.co.uk is the place to go. Ian.
My blog is iandee.net, where you'll see a fantastically detailed post on NAS drives. And
just put a picture of a sunset in; it'd be nice.
But you might see some drone footage.
Ah, nice, yeah.
And yeah. And Twitter is Sweeper. I forgot
because it's not written down.
Yeah.
We will speak to you next week. I keep saying next week, but actually we're kind of weird in between days at the moment, but
you're racing
we'll
next weekend, aren't you?
Yes.
So
and I'll be
week after.
Wednesday evening is a possible but unlikely, I'd say.
And I'm
we'll
Tuesday.
See it'll be
what,
in your
this
inbox.
Doesn't make for good listening.
It doesn't. It'll be in your inbox when it's in your inbox, and god damn, you'll be grateful for it. We'll speak to you then. Goodbye.
Ta-da.
Yours is definitely sinister.